Hello, welcome to NavyBMR.com, where we hope to advance your career. NavyBMR.com is an unofficial website. It shall not claim to be, nor should it be assumed to be affiliated with the United States government, Department of Defense, or the United States Navy. Information contained herein is unclassified and is for reference and education only. It shall not be considered official policy or directive. Hello, welcome again. My name is Steve, and I'll be your instructor. Today we're going to be talking about NAVED Training 14295 Bravo, specifically Chapter 12, Inpatient Care. Now, if this is your first time joining us, I want to make sure you understand that we're not actually going to break down every component of the chapter, but rather we're going to focus on things that you can familiarize yourself with and read a little bit more into to set yourself up for success on the next Navy-wide advancement exam, because that is why you're here. If you're unfamiliar with this particular subject, I highly encourage you to read more into it, look into some references, and become a stronger healthcare professional, absolutely. And I'd also like to recommend follow along on a multimedia device available to you, or print it out and take some notes, do some highlighting for quick reference. Now, when we're talking about inpatient care, we're going to start off talking about a little bit of classifications. What is an inpatient? What is inpatient care kind of capsulizing there? Well, it's going to be any patient receiving diagnostic or therapeutic services or care, any sort of supportive care that they may be getting. That's going to kind of generally fall under almost everybody that's going to be coming in. Now, when we talk about surgical patients, however, they still fall under that inpatient, but the surgical patients, they're going to be the ones that obviously require the most amount of attention because they're going to go through many layers of your healthcare facility. But they're going to be broken down into two major sections, emergency and elective. Now, elective, we're not talking about your plastic surgery, anything cosmetic necessarily, but what we're more talking about between the difference between the two is emergency is something that if they don't get it right now, they're going to die. It is an emergency surgery and they're going stat. Whereas your elective surgery, it's going to be something they still need, but they can shift it on the calendar to the right. They can schedule it. I'm going to come in next Tuesday, whatever it may be. So that's what we're talking about in there. And then when we're talking about the different layers of your surgical patients and where they're going to be going through, you have your preoperative, your operative, your recovery, and your post-op. So that's something to kind of keep in mind, your four layers of your surgical team. Now, with surgery, for instance, we have certain medications, certain procedures that require a different level of anesthesia. Anesthesia is very powerful and deadly if not done correctly. That is why there are certain licenses and certifications and qualifications that must be met before somebody can just give some sort of anesthesia. Well, the biggest piece to that is going to be the documentation. With any drugs that we give, no matter where you work in today's Navy, as a healthcare professional, documentation of the drugs that we're giving to any of our patients is absolutely imperative. We have to make sure that we are making sure that the next level of care, the next echelon, knows they can read through what they're allergic to and what they're getting. So in this case, we're talking about the SF-522, the 522. The SF-522 is a request for anesthesia, and it's going to also be for additional procedures that may be requested. But what we're going to be talking about as we feed this in, so your SF-522, it's going to break down some of our different kind of layers or different components of the anesthesia that we're going to be kind of talking about. So regional, if you've ever worked in an ER, if you worked in a BAS, anything like that, you're thinking about like removing toenails, really nasty fingernails if someone had a crush. You're kind of thinking about your local blocks, your nerve blocks. That's going to be kind of a good thought process to reference that. It's a very specific region that you're going to be isolating. Again, like an example, fingers, toes, of that nature. Your topical, right? If you got someone with a nasty injury and you just need to kind of numb it, it's going to be a very short and very small area. So small, localized area, and it's only going to last a little while. So epidurals. So gentlemen, your spouses or your significant others, ladies, you absolutely, if you've had children or have a friend that's had a children, family member, you know the value of an epidural, generally used for pregnant women in labor. That's going to be a catheter that's going to be placed in the epidural space along the spine. It's going to be a continuous flow of medication, and it's going to provide that that pain management that's needed during the birthing process. Whereas saddle, now your saddle blocks are going to be something a little different. Your saddle blocks are actually going to be going into your third and fourth lumbar, into your dural sac. And what this does is it actually blocks the impulses to your perineal area, their perineal site, to help any sort of reactions, any sort of nerves firing going there. So that's another thing that you may hear about or be educated about if you can make your way up to the L&D ward. Maybe familiarize yourself, ask somebody to show you or explain some stuff to you. So if not everyone works on those floors or works around that type of healthcare community, so if you can expose yourself to it, it's only going to make you better, and I highly encourage it. Now, sometimes our patients are unconscious, and you'll see that a similar type of chart, generally referencing shock, and we're talking about the different stages of shock and the different pieces that we're looking at when we consider how someone is transitioning through shock, whether they're alert and oriented or not. Well, we have a similar chart here. You can pull this out of the chapter. It's in there. You can copy, paste, and blow it up, whatever you need to do to kind of help yourself understand it. But actually getting a grip of understanding what's going to be happening line by line, block by block, it's going to help better process what's going on as a healthcare professional in your mind, so you know what's going on with the medication and with the patient. So from a clinical standpoint, you're becoming better and more capable. But from an advancement exam purpose as well, if you're given a tricky question and you're trying to work your way through it, you're able to start processing that, and you understand the pathophysiology, the anatomy and physiology, the chemical and biological processes that are taking place, and you can kind of start checking these boxes off and get to your correct answer or have an educated guess if you're stuck between the two. So again, I highly recommend you go through this, familiarize yourself with it, the blood pressure, the pulse, the respirations, and the different reaction levels or layers, if you would, of what's actually happening when these medications are administered. Now, we've talked about the surgical patients, we've talked about the drug administration and the documentation of that, but the next thing that we kind of generally associate ourselves with when we talk about inpatient, occupational therapies or physical therapy, rehab, if you would, you're going to think like orthopedics, you're going to think like traumatic brain injuries, things that take a while to recover from, to rebuild strength, to get that connective tissue and everything back to where it was, to get the health of that bone or that organ or that some sort of structure back in your body, back to where it needs to be. So we're going to talk about like casting. Think about your AMP. So make sure you understand, not necessarily, okay, this is the process of how to wrap everything, but just understand that if you're going to do a short arm cast or a long arm cast, if you're just trying to isolate the wrist, reference your anatomy and physiology and kind of know your landmarks, if you would, on how far you're going to be casting or what you're going to be casting and what the purpose of it is, the above and below joints that you're trying to isolate. For canes, understand that like the C, sometimes it's called a J cane, are usually your most common. They're not going to be for that super supportive patients that, in terms of weight bearing, like crutches, if you would, because the key number here is it only takes 25% of your body weight. So that 25% is going to be generally for those patients that can get off on their own. They don't require a lot of supervision, if any. They can come back on their own, and they kind of work their way off the cane. Generally, if they have a cane, they've had a walker, they've had crutches, which is what's next, right? So understanding crutches, that 2 points of contact, generally it's going to be someone that needs that extra support beyond that 25% relief of their total body weight. A walker, think about generalized weakness, think about confusion, think about somebody who has poor balance or a poor gait. So think about a lot of our wounded warriors. They've been blown up, so their equilibriums are off. They have traumatic brain injury, which triggers a lot of other signs and symptoms, and we're still learning a lot about it. But if you go certain hospitals around our country where we're treating our wounded warriors from downrange for a lot of these larger IEDs, these post-blast studies that they're doing, we're seeing that there's a lot of neurological components to the evaluations and to the care that we're giving that we didn't know a decade before and so on. So think about the walkers when you see someone walking around, those neurological changes that they may be having, they need to sit down or something to kind of help tie in why somebody would need that when you look at it. Now generally, somebody who's going to be in there having surgery or going through a lot of rehab and everything, they're having a hard time. You're going to see different stages of trying to eventually accept what has happened to them, or whether what happened to their loved one, if it's someone dying. That's generally what we relate this to. But your five stages, right? Your denial, your anger, your bargaining. Those are going to be your first three major waves that you're going to see somebody or a loved one going through, followed by depression and acceptance. So again, kind of like knowing your chart, right, and how your unconscious patient, because they're not talking to you, you're not able to see, they're not screaming anymore from the pain, you check their vital signs, right? Well, if you know something is bad, that you're having a patient take a turn for the worst, you have an idea as to how they're going to react or how their loved one is going to react, and you're able to make sure the right people or the processes or the systems are in place, or the resources available to them, if you would, to better mitigate and guide them through this process. So that's just something to kind of familiarize yourself with as well. All right, now we haven't had a lot of instructions on this one, but I do have one BuMed instruction, the BuMed instruction 6200.12, okay? So all of you that use tobacco, all right, this one should be easy for you to remember, 6200.12, because it's referring to you guys. And that's going to be the tobacco use in the Navy Medical Department. So we don't have that. We have no smoking signs, right? We have lots of oxygen tanks. It's bad for your health. All the different pieces of what we are as healthcare. All right, now we haven't had a lot of instructions on this one. So for those of you that are smokers, this one will be an easy one to remember. So our BuMed instruction 6200.12. So this one is going to be referencing tobacco use in Navy medical departments. So think about all your non-smoking signs, the education that we provide to our patients or their family members. Think about all the policies or enforcement procedures that we have in place to make sure for safety precautions, right? We have a lot of oxygen and other components and equipment in the area that we don't necessarily want blowing up. So that's going to be the instruction that we're going to want to kind of consider when we go through this chapter. Now the last piece of this chapter, so we've talked about a lot about like people coming through the OR, people coming through orthopedics, rehab, physical therapy. Inpatient care consists of a wide spectrum of pretty much touches every department in a medical treatment facility or clinic, wherever you may be. But part of that is making sure that we're keeping everything clean. Now we've talked previously about sanitation, the disinfection, the sterilization processes, procedures, the options that we have, and the methods in which we do them. But in this one, we're going to have concurrent cleaning and terminal cleaning. So for concurrent cleaning, what we're talking about is that disinfection and that sterilization while the patient is in the room. So someone's there a week. We don't necessarily want them to go a week and not have anything cleaned. We want to make sure we contain the germs, contain any sort of cross-contamination, any of that stuff. So that's going to be your concurrent cleaning. Your terminal cleaning It's going to be sterilization and disinfection of the supplies and the equipment and there are the available resources in the room or in the area. But that's going to be once the patient has been discharged or transferred to another area in the hospital. So again, your concurrent and your terminal cleaning, those are going to be the two things that we're going to want to kind of think about in this particular chapter. So again, we're going to talk about some other pieces to this, but like I said, we're going to talk about more in depth on the specifics of the medications or the procedures for getting the approval. Will come certain chapters, I think it's chapter 18, coming up on pretty soon. So we'll get into all that. If you have questions on the sterilization and the cleaning stuff, I encourage you to go back and watch our videos on those. Again, this is not a complete overview of everything you need to know to be an effective hospital corpsman. This is stuff to kind of familiarize yourself with, do a little bit of reading. If you can get hands-on at your site on any of these to help better familiarize yourself with it. The idea here is to set you up for that maximum success on your next Navy-wide advancement exam. I highly encourage you to use the resources available to you at NavyBMR.com. We have lots of practice tests and quizzes. We have videos. We have audio files. We have a lot of available resources there for you to tap into. I highly, highly encourage you to do that to maximize your chances. Again, my name is Steve with NavyBMR.com, and I will see you next time. Thank you.